through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now is ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. Brady, I want to get to, Josh Gordon and a report from Jacina Anderson, a couple other things about the Seahawks. But first, I want to really quickly get your opinion on what Jake and I opened our show with, which is basically how confident we were about the start of the season and how closely we think the NFL is watching the NBA and MLB as they kick things off in July. So I'm curious to hear from you as an ESPN reporter, someone who covers this team regularly. How confident are you that the season will actually start on time?
Oh, I mean, not entirely confident. And you know, NFL has the benefit of the timing here in a couple ways. And one, you know, this whole, you know, the you-know-what started hitting the fan right when the NFL season ended. So they were the furthest away from starting. And the other benefit is that, you know, these other leagues are now starting or starting back up in the case of the NBA. And the NFL is going to get to use those as you know, just kind of test cases and to see how it works for them. You know, the NBA, MLB with the 60-game season, MLS is starting up again or starting at some point. And so NFL will be able to kind of tell what's working and what's not working. That said, I'm still not entirely confident that it's going to start on time. And that's just, you know, one reporter's opinion on that. You know, there's probably a million people who would have a better idea of that from medical experts and people within the league. But, you know, just seeing kind of what's happening with states and the second wave and everything like that, I'm not 100% confident, but they will at least have the benefit of seeing how it goes in those other leagues first.
Brady, I think one underrated aspect about that, as you mentioned, just the kind of the difficulty and the unknown of whether it's going to start on time, is the fact that the NFL had basically conceded in saying, look, we're not going to start our normal, regular programming in regards to preseason games. What advantage does the NFL have in that regard to delay or cut out the Hall of Fame game and the first two preseason games for teams?
Yeah, and maybe that's the answer. And you know, it's just, you know, it's not like golf, and it's not even like baseball, where, you know, the golf especially, but even baseball to some degree is, you know, a lot more conducive to, you know, keeping your distance than a sport like football. It's just, I think, you know, I can't remember what coach said it recently. Maybe it was Sean McVay, but just kind of highlighting the kind of absurdity of all that, where, you know, in a time where, with a pandemic going on, it's in everybody's best interest to really keep their distance. And that is the exact opposite idea of football, where you're tackling each other, you're huddling up before every play. It's just not like baseball, or especially not like golf in that regard. So that's another reason why I'm just not entirely confident. And, you know, even pushing back, you know, or even condensing the off season, you know, the way they have, and maybe even condensing the preseason to two games, I'm not sure that's going to be the you know, cure all to all of that.
What's the latest on Josh Gordon?
The latest on Josh Gordon, from what I understand, is he submitted his reinstatement to the NFLPA a couple weeks ago. And the way that typically works, from what I understand, is you submit it to the NFLPA, the NFLPA sends it to the NFL, and it ultimately, at some point, ends up in the lap of Roger Goodell, who is going to oversee his entire reinstatement bid. And I imagine under normal circumstances, Goodell would want to meet with Gordon face to face, but maybe that becomes a virtual meeting at some point. And you know, as for the timing, you know, from what I understand, it was about a month last year when he applied for reinstatement last summer. I think he did so in July, and he was reinstated in mid-August, I believe. So his team wanted to sort of, you know, give themselves a little bit of, you know, buffer by, you know, submitting that application, that reinstatement application, in mid-June. That way, assuming it takes maybe a couple weeks longer, there's still a chance that that he could be in training camp. He could be on a, you know, signed by a team in time for training camp, which is his goal. And, you know, I think an important piece of all this is Goodell could, in theory, conditionally reinstate him or reinstate him from his suspension, but then still tack on a specific number of games to that suspension. So, you know, reinstating him from suspension would allow him to sign with a team, allow him to take him part in training camp in the preseason, but then he would be suspended, you know, for X number of games once the season starts. And the benefit to him is that, A, he lands with the team, he gets to sort of, you know, get a head start on picking up their offense, or if it's Seattle in terms of, you know, maybe sort of introducing himself to that offense. But that would be better than just having no sort of NFL, you know, training camp or anything like that, and then all of a sudden trying to latch on with the team once that suspension is over.
So, Brady, you talk about Josh Gordon here. There's another receiver that you don't know exactly what his situation is going to be in terms of being suspended for, you know, for how many X games, and brings a little bit of controversy, is Antonio Brown. What is your read on that situation, and what's your take on, you know, when, if it would happen at all, where Antonio Brown could be signed by the Seahawks?
Yeah, so from what I understand, from what I've been told, what was reported, you know, was accurate, that, you know, Russell is very interested in having him around, and I'm not breaking any news to you there, Jake, but also the fact that, you know, there was some discussion there a few weeks ago, and from what I understand, that there hasn't been a ton going on since then, and I kind of get the sense that that was more so due diligence on the Seahawks' part than an indication that anything is immediate there, just because there's a lot to be sorted out with Antonio Brown in terms of, you know, legal situations. There's some very serious allegations against him. And so, that's why, you know, I think of the two, if it's going to be one of those two, Josh Gordon or Antonio Brown, I think it would probably be more likely Gordon. And that's not to say that either of those are necessarily likely, but just with everything that still has to be sorted out with Antonio Brown, and the unknown about, you know, what type of, you know, how would that work in the locker room, and what type of headache would he be? You know, for all of, you know, Josh Gordon's issues that he has, from what everything I've heard, he was a model teammate and he was great in that locker room. And, you know, the downside to signing Josh Gordon and giving him another chance is, you know, he has another slip up, and that would basically be the same as a guy getting injured. You know, he just wouldn't be there. The downside with Antonio Brown is a lot more than that, just with his history. So that's why I say, if you're asking me which of those two is more likely, I would have to say Josh Gordon.
I'm kind of assuming that if Josh Gordon gets reinstated, and obviously we shouldn't assume, but I'm assuming he just ends up with Seattle because of the clear interest on his side. But I guess in doing that, I'm not considering the interest from Seattle. Do you think that goes both ways?
Well, I know for a fact that he would love to play for the, he would love to get another chance at the Seahawks. He really enjoyed his time there from what I've heard. He also really has an affinity for Russell Wilson. And I think that, yeah, if the situation was right, and it was a low cost, you know, another low cost opportunity, I would imagine that the Seahawks would have that interest too, just because you're talking about a guy who, is as talented as, you know, most receiver is almost any receiver in the NFL. And, you started to see some flashes of that, you know, that game that he had right before the suspension came down. He hauled in a 58-yard catch, a 58-yard, you know, reception on an incredible, you know, fingertip catch. And, you know, I think there's a thought that if he was there for longer and had more time to kind of get his footing in there, that he could have been, you know, a nice player for them, late last season. And so, yeah, I would imagine, I know for a fact that the interest is there on Josh Gordon's side, and I would imagine that it would be there too on the Seahawks side.
Brady, you were kind of the one, everybody's kind of speculating on Jadeveon Clowney and, you know, the offers that he has been given and the situation with him and the Seahawks. And you were kind of the one here in this town that said, look, guys, I know there's been a lot of speculation, but what you do know is that he did get an offer. He rejected that offer from the Seahawks, and therefore there is no real offer on the table currently and no real talks going on between the two of them. Josina Anderson reported yesterday that Clowney intends to sign before the start of the season. Do you think that there is even a chance that he comes on back with the Seahawks? And with how this market has gone on at a significantly lower price than what he's been asking for all offseason?
I do think there's a chance, yeah. And I think that there has, you know, the Seahawks have never entirely given up on that, but, you know, the reason why it has seemed unlikely to me, and I think unlikely to people in that building, is that, you know, like you said there, like you just relayed, you know, they made him an offer and he turned that down, and they started, you know, spending that money elsewhere, money that they had offered to him. They really reached a point where they decided they had to move on and start filling, you know, holes elsewhere. So they started spending money. And so if he were to come back, my understanding is that, or if, you know, if that were to come into play again, where they start talking again, the offer that they offered him no longer on the table, you'd be talking about significantly less. I don't know exactly what those two numbers are. I think that, you know, they offered him something around $15 million. And if I had to guess what the price would be if he were to come back, I would guess less than $10 million. And so, wow. You know, not out of the question, but, you know, the question then becomes, okay, can he get that from other teams? And that's why I don't think it's entirely dead, because I think that what happened with the Seahawks, that could happen with any other team that has been interested in him. You know, there was a report from Adam Schefter that the Cleveland Browns offered him $18 million. I heard the same thing. And I can't imagine that deal is still on the table for Cleveland. And I wonder if, you know, the same thing that happened with the Seahawks could be happening with other teams, that whatever they offered to him, you know, whatever offer that was back in March, April, May, that's not going to be there in July, August. And so maybe there it's a situation where maybe his best offer is whatever the Seahawks are willing to offer him at that point. But even then, you know, I think the Seahawks, with their financial situation, they would have to start cutting guys. And I think it would be a question of, you know, are you weakening yourself at other positions just to strengthen, you know, their pass rush? And so that's another layer to that conversation. But it's not entirely dead, but for that reason, it just doesn't seem like it's all that likely either.
Speaking of defense, you have an article, Brady, up on ESPN.com called "Better, Worse, or the Same? Can the Seahawks D bounce back after a rough 2019? What was your answer?
Yeah, well, the way I wrote that, and that was that's kind of a format that we've been using at ESPN.com, just taking stock of every team's offseason on both sides of the ball. And I believe, you know, the pass rush, I believe the grade I gave that was the same, just because they, you know, you're going to have Jaron Reed. That's kind of a thing that people forget, is, you know, you only had Jaron Reed for 10 games last year, and you had him, you know, that was whatever, you know, effect that layoff had on him. You know, you are in theory going to get him for a full season this year. You got some other pieces there that you know, they're not going to be, it's hard to imagine them being a whole lot better without their best defensive lineman and Clowney, but it's also hard for me to imagine that pass rush only finishes with, you know, fewer than 28 sacks last year, just because that number, it just seems like there's nowhere to go but up from there. So that was kind of the idea of it, is just taking a position group by position group and saying, you know, are they better, worse, or the same? And then I think the linebacker core is better with the addition of a first-round pick and swapping out Michael Kendricks for Bruce Irvin. And then with the secondary, obviously the big unknown there is Quentin Dunbar, and whether or not his legal situation is going to impact his availability. And certainly if he's there, then that secondary got better with not only him, but the fact that you're going to have a full season out of Quandre Diggs after only having him for a handful of games last year.
Brady, is there one more addition that the Seahawks are needing that you look at this roster and go, man, if they could make one more addition at this specific position, they will be far better off than where they are currently?
Well, mine is probably the same as a lot of people's. My answer is probably the same as a lot of people's. That question is, I think they could use another edge rusher, just because I think a lot would have to go right for that group to be, you know, for that to be a championship caliber pass rush, especially in an off season like this, where, you know, look, you spent a second round pick on Daryl Taylor. You know, I don't know if he's going to be in a position, having had no rookie minicamp, no OTAs, no minicamp. You know, that's going to be hard for young players across the board, for rookies and young players across the board, to come in and make an immediate impact right away. And it's already hard for pass rushers, for rookie pass rushers who aren't those, you know, top five, top 15 picks to come in and have a huge season. And so that would be the one position, if there's a veteran, you know, defensive end on the cheap who could come in here and just be another piece of that equation. That's one position. You know, another one I wonder about too is just run stuffing defensive tackle, just because they lost Quentin Jefferson, lost Al Woods in free agency, and didn't really sign a veteran to come in and replace either of those guys. So that tells me that they're going to rely a lot more on Puna Ford than they did last year. But that would be those would be the two positions, defensive end and pass rushing defensive end and a run stuffing defensive tackle.
That was ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson, friend of the station, friend of the show. Follow him at Brady Henderson on Twitter. Go read his stuff on ESPN.com. Brady, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, Stacey and Jake, thanks for having me. Take care.
Thanks, Brady. You too.
All right. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to Jake.
First down.
That's what I said, Stacey.
I'm getting better at not trying to. I'm an alpha, Curtis.
It's true.
Need to
you are.
Have the first say.
You okay. Lead us.
Okay, go.
You lead us, we follow. You lead us into darkness. That's what Doug Baldwin told Russell Wilson, right? Jake, what is the latest crazy method you were using to train Russell Wilson? Just psychotic method.
Oh my gosh, it's wild, right? Go look at Russell Wilson's latest post. Pretty cool. Just advanced technology, using things to your advantage, and one of the things that ended up coming across is these remote control dummies, like these big old tackling dummies that you can actually use remotely, and they go up to like 20 some miles an hour. These things fly. And so I actually was able to have a little fun with this and be able to use this remote dummy to kind of simulate some pocket movement drills for Russell Wilson. You know, what he posts is just a snapshot of it, but really cool aspect of, okay, can you recreate things that happen within the pocket when you're not actually playing the game? No, but technology like this actually gives you a chance to do that. And so, here in the video that you guys watch on social media, there's just one, but at times we've used two to three dummies at the same time. And it's actually, we've been able to get some really, really unique things done and positive things done in terms of Russell's training. So overall, taking advantage of this opportunity that you have to try new things. And look, in quarantine, you're not supposed to get close. So what's the next best thing? Remote control tackling dummies.
Second down.
Those could hold a lot of weight. You know? You could race them like horses.
Oh, yeah.
Just something to think about.
If you get hit by them, they hurt. They hurt, by the way.
Yeah, you could launch them at your friends who aren't looking. Just boom.
That's right.
Railroaded by a tackling dummy.
Okay, well, that's incredibly mean. I would not do that. But you could race them like greyhounds.
You could.
Curtis, what's second down?
Second down to you, Stacey. What happened?
Yes.
To the fullback in the modern NFL?
It's like the dinosaur. We miss them and love them. No, reliance on the position has certainly seen a decline to the point where in 2019, just 14 teams had a fullback signed to a multi-year deal. A big part of that, no surprise here, you all know it, it's the evolution of the passing offense. So a couple interesting things here, mostly from 538, but I got one from Football Outsiders too. From 538, in 2006, more than 13,000 offensive snaps have been from formations with two running backs. In 2018, that number was about 3,700. That's quite a dip. According to Football Outsiders, in 2018, 64% of offensive personnel groupings were 11 personnel, meaning one running back and one tight end. About 17% were 12 personnel, your two tight end sets, and just 7.3% were 21 personnel, meaning two running backs. But... it doesn't mean fullbacks aren't a useful tool to an NFL offense. How they help is what's been really changed. So this is according to 538. From about 2017 and onward, the use of two backs has had a better effect on pass plays rather than run plays. That information could be skewed a bit since more teams obviously run than pass when they have a fullback on the field. But adding a fullback in passing situations does add a mismatch and added deception. The best use of this, Kyle Shanahan's 49ers offense this past season, where Kyle Juszczyk has excelled as a receiver, totaling 878 receiving yards and three touchdowns in three seasons.
Third down. I beat you, Stacey.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
This dang delay.
Yes. Jake, what is the lack of defensive tackle depth tell you about what the Seahawks are trying to do?
Well, what it tells me right now, and look, it could change on a dime, right? Come across the ticker, hey, breaking news, a defensive tackle assigning to the Seattle Seahawks. But as of right now, as it currently sits, what it's telling you is that, A, they have a tremendous amount of confidence in Jaron Reed and Puna Ford, an insane amount of confidence because you don't have a ton of depth behind those two guys. But also, what I think is really intriguing is that they are going to be using Rasheem Green and LJ Collier more at the three technique position than you might realize. So they might be using those two guys and kicking them down to be defensive tackles more often than you might think, now that you've got so many guys that can play that edge rush position across your front. So it really comes down to, are you playing more of these young guys and trying to use versatility to your advantage? Or are you going to, when it's all said and done, add that run-stuffing defensive tackle? I hope they do the latter. But, I mean, when you talk about currently as this roster sits and how are they going to get by with it, that's the one answer. And it would be, I don't know if it would be good, but it certainly would be fascinating to see how it would work out.
Fourth down. Jake, who will have to do more adjusting in 2020? Bill Belichick or Cam Newton?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question to me because I know we had Mike Salk on the show and just talking about the dynamic that will potentially be there between Cam Newton and Bill Belichick. But the thing is Bill Belichick will be adjusting his offensive scheme X's and O's for Cam Newton. But I think the person that has to do the most adjusting is actually Cam Newton himself, because Cam Newton, what we know about him, his fun-loving nature, all those things are tremendous positives. But when you talk about when things go wrong, I don't think Bill Belichick is going to be a fan of Cam Newton having a towel over his head sulking on the bench. Like, that's not going to fly with Bill Belichick. You know, I think that there's other aspects to Cam that he's going to really have to step up his game in his preparation and everything. And I think that the one that has to do the most adjusting is going to be Cam Newton. I don't think Bill Belichick is going to be doing a whole lot of changing and changing his style, changing his culture, and the way he's run his organization for Cam Newton for one season.
Agreed. Agreed, Jake. Can confirm. All right. I've got a really good story that someone just tagged me in for the timeline during this segment, and I don't think you guys have heard about it. It just broke in a feature article from Bloomberg that was very recently published. So the story is like less than 24 hours old. It is a doozy. Oh my gosh. That's coming up at 1:45. Before then, though, we have the halftime show. The NFL won't start its season until September, but the next couple weeks will be monumental for the league. We'll explain why next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
If you're just now joining us on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, we're going to get you caught up with what you missed in sports today. So let's get started with what we opened our show with, which is what can the NBA and MLB teach us about the NFL's chances to play during COVID? Now, the NBA and MLB are taking very different approaches, but both are going to be starting in the month of July, one at the beginning, one at the end. And presumably the month of August will be really telling for both leagues. The NBA obviously choosing to host the rest of its season in kind of an incubated space in Florida, while the MLB will have spring training at each team's facility, and then teams will travel to play games like a regular season, only instead of their opponents they were going to face in 2020, they'll be stuck within their region, meaning the AL and NL West will be facing each other. You guys already knew this, but since then, we've been wondering what this means for the NFL, and that includes a report that broke in our last segment from Pro Football Talk. They said that weeks 1 and 4 of the NFL preseason have reportedly been canceled. Now, for Seattle, that would mean that the games against the Raiders and Vikings games have been scrapped, but the Seahawks would still play, if this is true, August 22nd at Houston at 5 p.m. our time, and August 27th versus the Los Angeles Chargers at 7 p.m. Jake.
Kind of odd timing, don't you think? Like,
well, it's weird. I'm out of breath from running downstairs. Sorry.
Had to go make that snack run okay. In between the break.
Yeah.
But I think it's weird, honestly, Stacey. I think when you look at it from, you know, just week one to week four, what's the difference there? To me, it would make a lot more sense if you were saying, hey, we're going to go the first 2 weeks of the preseason. We're not going to have any games because we want this ramp-up period, the startup period. But I guess in theory, you're also trying to figure out this coronavirus situation. You're trying to give yourself enough time, not delay the progression of everything. But then it gives, you know, basically teams an extra week to actually focus on their week one opponent rather than dealing with the preseason game four. So, again, odd timing. I don't know if this is actually true or not, but it would be interesting to see how this would come about, Stacey. And, you know, either way, I guess I'm not overly heartbroken about either way, you know?
Next story. I now regret bragging that I could beat Dave Wyman in a foot race. Because he said on Bob, Dave, and More yesterday that he thought that outside of you and then Paul Gallant, he could beat anyone in our fake 7-10 lineup. And I was like, excuse me, I'm a young, spry 30-ish-year-old, and you really think you could beat me? But now I'm like, okay, no, Stacey, your heart is not well. Like, you need to be honest with yourself.
Okay, well, let's have the real open conversation that we had during the break, okay? You were calling into question that Dave Wyman couldn't beat you because you said, quote, bad knees.
No, but I said it in a nice way, Dave. I said it in a really nice way. I said Dave has done so much good, and he's been such a great athlete.
I don't think you might have said it at all.
No, I said it like that, Dave. I absolutely said it like that. I would take bullets for Dave Wyman. I would never say that.
Well, I know you would take bullets for Dave Wyman. We all would because we love Dave. But you specifically said, well, Dave's got bad knees. And then I told you very pointedly and seriously that – unfortunately, when you run, it makes me think that you have bad knees, Stacey. So, like,
there's,
I mean,
there's an unfortunate video of me running down our hallway at work that was circulated on social media by who I can only assume are my enemies, and
You posted yourself.
I was wearing loafers, very slippery loafers, and I was wearing a helmet that was too big. There were reasons for it. Let me get to our actual story. Russell Wilson had an interview with Kevin Hart for Kevin Hart's YouTube series. It's hilarious. Jake, what was the number one takeaway or thing you learned from that interview?
I think probably the biggest takeaway for me is that when you look at Russell's journey throughout this process, he has dealt with a tremendous amount of adversity. He's also made some interesting decisions along the way. I mean, he told Kevin Hart in that interview that, hey, I would have committed to playing baseball full time if they had offered me a $1.4 million contract. They offered me $1.1 million, and so I walked away. Like, really? 0.3 of $1 million, like $300,000 is the difference between you playing and not playing. And yeah, I guess we're as Seahawks fans, you have to be very thankful that ended up being the case because, man, it's been such a franchise builder. But it's that confidence in himself. It's also, you know, the adversity when he got drafted. You know, the day he got drafted was the highest of the highs for baseball. And then immediately the next day, the lowest of the lows with his dad passing away. And, you know, Russell having to grow up in that moment really quickly and trying to find who he is and what ultimately he wanted to do and chase his dream, I think is a pretty fascinating story. What about you, Stacey?
Yeah, it's such a great... Well, you know what's weird is that it's like a 12-minute interview. It's really quick. It's funny throughout. Kevin Hart's a wonderful host. And as I was writing notes, I realized these are some of the biggest moments in Russell Wilson's life. He talks about losing his dad. He talks about getting the starting job for the Seahawks. He talks about being doubted for his height at the combine. And then he talks about Super Bowl 49. And yet I didn't realize it as we were watching or as I was watching the interview because they're just having this fun conversation. And so you actually, I feel like there's quite a bit to take away from it. All right, let's get to story number three. We had ESPN's Brady Henderson on with us to start our second hour. If you missed it, as a reminder, you can listen to it on the Tom, Jake, and Stacey podcast, wherever you download your podcasts, or go to 710sports.com and find us there. I think the thing that stands out to be most, even though this is maybe something we already knew, is that Josh Gordon has put in his application to be reinstated, essentially. And the interest is very much there for him to return to Seattle. Brady Henderson said, I know for a fact he wants to come back and play for the Seahawks. And then guessed that the feeling was somewhat mutual, although we don't really know how Seattle feels about it. I can only assume they'd be happy to get Josh Gordon back. Jake, what stood out to you?
Well, actually, what stood out to me, and I wanted to talk about this at some point in the show, Stacey, is that Brady Henderson said that Josh Gordon has an affinity for Russell Wilson, right? Like, that was one of the reasons why he wanted to come back. And look at Antonio Brown, an affinity for Russell Wilson, and why the Seahawks are a potential place there. What does that say about Russell Wilson? And I think what it says about him is that the reason why those relationships exist is because I think it's more than just caring about the football player. I think Russell Wilson has shown both of those guys that he cares about them as individuals and wants them to be better people from my experience and conversations. And I think that those two guys have really appreciated that. So I think that with Josh Gordon, I think he'd be a tremendous fit back here in Seattle. I think he would be the easiest fit with the past experience of knowing who he is and what he's about. And hopefully that with the new CBA in place, that it's an easier thing to be able to keep Josh Gordon on the roster and may hopefully not be as big of a risk as everybody thinks and what it has been over the past 5 years of his career.
A tweet from an ESPN personality is making the rounds this morning, but it's for a good reason. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline. Reading you the top trending stories you're going to see on your own Twitter accounts. If you see any you want us to include, go ahead and tag us at Stacey Rost, at JT Heaps 9, at Tom Wassel. If you hear a siren in the background, it's because I'm broadcasting from my garage. A tweet from ESPN's Peter Burns is making the rounds this morning, but it's for good reason. I'm sure that you guys have all seen this. It's awesome. I'm going to read you some of my favorite responses. So Peter Burns' tweet says, what's your favorite random sports stat that blows your mind every time you see it? And I've taken a couple of my favorites. Are you ready?
Yes.
First, this one. Wayne Gretzky scored the most goals in NHL history. If you take away all his goals, he still would have had the most points in NHL history. Because assists count as points.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Wow, that's pretty insane. That is absolutely insane. Okay, what else you got?
Turns out Wayne Gretzky was pretty good at the hockey.
He was okay.
I'm gonna hate myself for this.
Some might call him great.
Some might call him great. Some might. I don't know who, but some. Larry Fitzgerald. This one's my favorite. Larry Fitzgerald has more tackles than drops in his NFL career. What?
That stat is absolutely absurd. Absurd. He has more tackles than he has drops. What that means is he's played for a lot of bad quarterbacks in his career, and he's had to make a lot of tackles on interceptions thrown by those quarterbacks. And yet over his long career, I mean, think about that. What? How many tackles is that? I mean, I don't know exactly how many he has, but let's just say it's 20, right, at the most.
Yeah.
To 25, yeah. Maybe. I mean,
that means you have less than that many drops over the course of your career.
That's insane. What an absolute beast.
First
ballot Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. Next up, Nolan Ryan struck out 7 pairs of fathers and sons. That's pretty crazy.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Curtis, has there ever been a run like that from a pitcher ever?
He was just around forever. I think he pitched in like 26, 27 seasons. So, yeah, you're bound to run into at least one pair of fathers and sons. The only one I can think of off the top of my head during that time was like with Ken Griffey and Ken Griffey Jr. Other than that, I mean, there are probably a few others in there, obviously. But, yeah, geez, that is wild.
This one, I think, might even have more likes than the original tweet. And I already know it's Jake's favorite. Peyton Manning's longest run in the NFL was 33 yards. Trent Richardson's longest run in the NFL was 32 yards. That's an insane sports stat. It did blow my mind.
I mean, what? How is this even possible? Stacey, first off, what is more impressive or what is more outrageous? So, you know, you could phrase it either way. That Peyton Manning actually had a 33-yard run in the NFL. How did that happen, right? Because we all know Peyton is very slow. And then second of all, Trent Richardson, who – now, everybody wants to remember that he was an awful player and washed out as a high first-round pick. But he also almost rushed for over 1,000 yards his rookie season. He was at 900-some yards.
He had a good rookie season. 11 touchdowns.
11 touchdowns. And yet he never rushed over – that mark?
No, nope.
That's absurd. Absolutely absurd.
I think with Indy, he had like 2-point-something yards per carry. I mean, it might have been 2.9, but that's still, as the kids say, not good. Tiger Woods is third all-time in wins on the European Tour. He has never been a full-time member of that tour. That one's pretty crazy.
Dominant.
Tiger Woods.
Absolutely dominant.
Good at golf. Really what these stats are telling me, my takeaways are Larry Fitzgerald, good receiver. Wayne Gretzky, good at hockey. Tiger Woods, good at golf. But the stats themselves are just also really insane.
What about the one other baseball stat here that it's Curtis, I don't want to butcher this name and have you laugh at me because it's a baseball one, but is it Stan Musial?
Stan Musial.
I skipped over it because I was afraid to say it.
Musial. I know you were. That's why I brought it up. I'll take the bullet for you, Stacey. Say it again, Curtis.
Stan Musial.
The Musial.
Nothing unusual about Stan Musial.
I mean, he hit for a lot of hits, and yet he had the same exact hit total on the road as he did at home. The same 1,815 hits, both at home and on the road in his career. How crazy is that? How is that even possible?
People are very disappointed with us that we don't know Stan Musial, but, well, now I do. I mean, I learned about it now. Okay, so I have this story to get to. We're going to end with an update on Jay Cutler, who finally found his chicken killer. Was it an inside job? Was it the family cat? Was it an outsider? Was it Jay himself? I'll get to that in a second. But first, I have to tell you this story that was we were tagged in for the timeline. It is an absolutely crazy one. So, as I'm sure most of you know, the Giants Super Bowl rings were stolen in June of 2008 out of a jewelry store in Massachusetts, which was kind of a weird place to have your rings made when you just beat the Patriots, but whatever. Anyways, in 2008, that jewelry store was burglarized and millions of dollars worth of jewelry was stolen. That includes the Super Bowl rings for the Giants. I think like 24 or something like that. So the story just came out in Bloomberg. It's this very long feature. It's worth reading, but if you don't have time, a quick summary of it. The guy who actually stole the rings, his name is Sean Murphy. He is a huge Patriots fan. So he's finally telling his story because I think that he like is hoping that it gets turned into a movie. And to be honest, I don't want to like reward thievery or crime, but also this story is pretty insane. He had been a cat burglar since after his eighth grade year. Eighth grade. That's an insane time to start burglarizing places, but that's when he started. So after eighth grade, he starts doing that. And then it became a regular thing. This is from the Bloomberg article. On Saturday nights, he put on an all-black ninja suit and went out looking for things to steal. He was a cat burglar, the best in a town where burglary was still regarded as an art form. When he went to prison, he tried to write a manual on, how to steal things. And he was so mad that the Giants beat the Patriots that he found out where these rings were being made at this jewelry store, learned about the location, and then he broke into it by going to the roof, cutting a hole into the roof of the building, breaking into the building, and then obviously like taking all this money and all this gold. But what he found when he did it, obviously, was that it's a bit harder than it seems to try to put your Super Bowl rings that you just stole on the market. So he ended up hanging on to a ton of them and like didn't really sell them or do anything. Like he gave one away as a gift, but like he couldn't do anything with them. Anyways, so I think he ended up going to jail again for this burglary because I think he got caught, but he's very recently done this interview where he talks about it.
Stacey, this sounds like Ocean's 11, like this whole different underground world that we know nothing about. Like this is a bizarre story. Man, that is absolutely crazy. But you know, again, you look at this story, and I mean, to think somebody's out there just this is what they do for their profession. This is what they do, like, willingly and actively, and there's an art form, and you're going to try and write a book and a manual about it. Like, man, I don't know. I mean, if you're that successful, I guess hats off to you. I don't know, but that's a pretty crazy story.
All right, and finally, it's the finale to the true crime thriller you guys have all been waiting for. Jay Cutler finally found out who was savagely ripping the heads off of his chickens. There was a while when he thought it was maybe his cat Thelma, who he said was a savage with loose morals. Thelma was cleared of wrongdoing, thankfully. Him and his cat still on good terms. But ultimately found out that the attacker was a raccoon. Finally found it out. He did a stint, kind of like a stakeout wearing night vision goggles, and finally identified the murderer.
That's a pretty intense stakeout there for Jay Cutler, and good for him. You know, he looks like he's living his best life right now. Obviously retired, recently divorced, unfortunately for him, but it seems like he's in good spirits and doing well. So congrats to Jay on being able to solve that that tremendous murder mystery there. You know, we were talking about Wayne Gretzky, guys. Did you know that I played a high school game that Wayne Gretzky, Will Smith, and Joe Montana were in attendance for?
Beg pardon?
Yeah. What? All three of them were there at one of my games, yeah.
Cassius Marsh, absolutely. Too. Like,
that's right, Cassius Marsh.
Which belongs on there. Mount Rushmore. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I...
Yeah. yeah. It totally fits. You got Joe Montana, Will Smith... You got Wayne Gretzky, and how did I forget Cassius Marsh in that trio there? But yeah, I mean, it's a game that Cassius and I used to talk about all the time. But you know, when Skyline my senior year, we played Oaks Christian, who had all three of those celebrities had kids on those teams. It was a pretty fun time.
What a random. It's not even degrees of separation. That's crazy, Jake. All right. Know Your Seahawks is next, and today's profile features a player who lied about his high school rushing yards to get the job. But it's actually a pretty funny story. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.